प्रतिष्ठितामनो मे वाचि प्रतिष्ठितम् आविरादिर्मये धि वेदस्य महानीस्थः श्रुतं मे मा प्रहासिः अनेनाधीतेनाहोरात्रान् संदधामि ऋतं वदिष्यामि सत्यं वदिष्यामि तन्मामवतु तद्वक्तारम् अवतु माम् अवतु वक्तारम् ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। So today we are moving into the next hymn, and this is hymn of the book 5, which Sri Aurobindo translated and commented upon, of Shyavashva Atreya. And this Shyavashva Atreya is a very famous rishi of Atri family. He has two hymns to Savitar and many hymns to Maruts. And not only to Maruts, also to Agni, very famous, great hymns to Agni and Indra. So, let me first read this hymn. Om Yunjate mana uta yunjate dhiyah Vipra viprasya brhato vipashchitah Vihotra dadhe Vayuna vid eka id mahi devasya savituv parishtutih. Vishva rupani pratimunchate kavih prasavid bhadram dvipade chatushpade. Vinakam akhyat savita vareniyo anuprayanam ushasu vi rajati. Yasya prayanam anuan yaid yayuv Deva devasya mahimanam ojasa Yav parthivani vimame sa etashah Rajansi devah savita mahitvana Utayasi savitas trini rochana Uta suryasya rashmibhih sam uchyasi Uta ratrim ubhayatah pariyase Uta mitro bhavasi deva dharma bhih. Uteshishe prasavasya tvam eka id. Uta pusha bhavasi deva yama bhih. Ute dam vishvam bhuvanam virajasi. Shyavashvaste savitah stomam anashe. So, Sri Aurobindo makes an introduction to this hymn. The Rishi hymns the Sun God as the source of divine knowledge and the creator of the inner worlds. To him, the seer, the seekers of light yoke their mind and thoughts. He, the one knower of all forms of knowledge, is the one supreme ordainer of the sacrifice. He assumes all forms as the robes of his being and his creative sight and creates the supreme good and happiness for the two forms of life in the worlds. He manifests the heavenly world shining in the path of the dawn of divine knowledge. In that path, the other Godheads follow him, and it is his greatness of light that they make the goal of all their energies. He has measured out for us our earthly worlds by his power and greatness, but it is in the three worlds of light that he attains to his real greatness of manifestation in the rays of the divine sun. It's interesting that he attains. He rises to the three rochanas of Svar world, and only then he encompasses the night of our darkness with his being and his light and becomes Mitra, who by his laws produces the luminous harmony of our higher and lower worlds. Of all our creation, he is the one author, and by his forward marches, he is its increaser, until the whole world of our becoming grows full of his illumination. Now here, there are a few interesting moments which are, for those who study this paradigm, that Savitar himself is rising and attaining, as Shubhendu says, to his greatness in those realms, his real greatness of manifestation in the rays of the Divine Sun. He is the Divine Sun. But he attains in this manifestation his greatness in that realm of three rochanas, as if he is not that sun. And only then he encompasses, he embraces the night from both sides. And only then he becomes Mitra, transcendental consciousness here. So in a way, there is the whole process of revealing this knowledge through the manifestation is for him to rise to his highest nature of his own. And that nature is possible only in that transcendental realm of Trirochana, of intuitive mind, over mind and over mental gnosis. So it is not even supramental yet. But it explains that Svar, that puzzle of Svar, because if you read other hymns you will see that it is the greatest puzzle, that the Svar appears not before the manifestation takes place. All was manifested and then Svar appears. And because of that, when Agni flamed, he created the world of Svar. So the Svar is a possibility to reach to that divine manifestation. The link between the supermind and this lower creation is a possibility to reach to the supermind. It is transcendental to our world, and it embraces our world from both sides. It's a very puzzling picture, and every time I think about it, I'm bewildered, because mind can't get it. It's difficult to hold it. It's not three-dimensional. It's something else altogether. So when he says this, but it is in the three worlds of light that he attains to his real greatness of manifestation in the rays of the Divine Sun. The Sun reaches the greatness of manifestation in the rays of the Divine Sun. The divine and human. Shubhendu will explain it later. There are two translations of this hymn, and we will read both of them for Sri Aurobindo. He translated it twice. Yunjate mana uta yunjate dhiyah, vipra viprasya brhato vipashchitah, vihotra dadhe vayuna vid eka it, mahide vasya sabituv parishtutih. Man illumined yoke their mind, and they yoke their thoughts to him who is illumination and largeness and clear perceiving. Knowing all phenomena, he orders so the energies of the sacrifice. Vast is the affirmation of all things of Savitri, the divine creator. Injate manah. Uta, uta is end, yes, like cha, tatha. Yunjati dhiyah. So, vipra. Yunjate here is bahuvachanam, yeah? Is it bahuvachanam? Yes, yungte yunjate yunjate. Yunjate vipraha yunjate. So, yunjate. Vipraha yunjate manah. They are yoking the mind and they are yoking the dhi, the higher mind, the lower sense mind and the higher mind, buddhi, so to say, in a later paradigm, Sankhyayik paradigm. And that's the distinction we were learning about from our course in the philosophy of evolution. So these two minds, they yoke with his light. Vipraha, viprasya brihatah, vipaschitah. With this higher, vast vipra. These vipras, and vipra can be translated as the ecstatic priests, those who are trembling in ecstasy. They are connecting with him, one ecstatic priest who is vast, whose vipaschitah, again vipaschitah, whose consciousness is in ecstasy. Vihotra dadhe vayunavideka id, because eka indeed, he alone is indeed vayunavid, knowing all the worlds, dadhe holds or establishes widely vihotrani, all the hotras, all the sacrificial energies he holds. Hotra, Sri Aurobindo translates as sacrificial energies. Energies of the sacrifice. It's an interesting translation because we meet all the time this word in the Veda and we never know how to translate it. But these are sacrificial energies. Energies which make transformation, which make manifestation of the divine in this lower hemisphere. Votrani. So he widely distributes and holds Vidadhe, Votrani, all the sacrificial energies, knowing all the worlds, vayunavit, perceiving all the paths in the world, eka it, indeed alone, mahidevasya savituth parishtutih, and that is the great affirmation or establishment of the god Savitar. Mahi, great parishtutih, the affirmation all over. So all the sacrificial energies are his energies. He holds them. And because of that, his establishment and affirmation is great all over. There is nowhere where his establishment is not there. Yes. The Veda makes a distinction between two movements of energies, yes? And it's also very interesting because, truly speaking, there is no way that something can be non-sacrificial. But there are two movements in this sacrificial energy. One is that of the beings which cannot sacrifice, these darker beings which were born before the gods, so to say, before the light entered them. And these beings also participate in the sacrifice. These are asuras, churning the ocean with gods together. But they cannot sacrifice. Why? Because they are self-preserving creatures. They didn't know about sacrifice. They never did it from the beginning. Their nature is different. That's why in us we have two natures. Simultaneously, one nature is of our soul, of our subtle psychic nature, which wants to sacrifice. It came as a sacrifice. And other nature wants to preserve itself. And all this talking about survival is nothing but that asuric nature in the Vedic sense. Survival of what? Of the fittest. What does it mean? It means that something wants to survive. What to survive? To survive the change? To survive what? To survive that being which appeared, and to preserve it in its form, and always to preserve. And these two are constantly dealing with. One is pushing towards the progress, to change, to sacrifice, and other is pulling to preserve and to hold back and not to allow sacrifice. And both are needed for manifestation of the divine. Both are needed to discover this amrita in the manifestation. But Veda makes the distinction between two energies. One is asuric, so to say, not asuric, I'm using later term. It is not even asuric. All these beings have so many names. I will show you the whole table. There are maybe, I don't know, I made special 3 pages only names of these demons and all kind of creatures, Namuchi, Pipuru, all of those who appeared from Vritra and Shushna and God knows who, Panis and Dasas and Dasyus. They are all named because they have certain roles to play. Varchin, we met the other day, Vala, all these beings, Shambhara, Sambala, Samvala even. And that Shambhara who Rurik was searching for in Tibet, in Himalayas. It was conquered by Vishnu and Indra, as Veda says. So those fortified cities of Shambhara were conquered. So since they were conquered, they became divine, so he was looking for that ancient place, and most probably he found it. But Veda is more, in a way, less, less mental, more experiential in some way. And all these beings have names and functions and faculties of some kind. They did something in this process and do something. And we are already thinking in terms of concepts, yes, of light and darkness. But there it is rather of sacrifice and not sacrifice. And that's why Dasyus cannot sacrifice. They do not know what it is. They cannot speak the word, because the word, it seems, emerges out of the sacrifice. The word itself is a sacrificial consciousness, it seems, according to the Veda. They don't speak the word, they cannot speak the word, these creatures.
I was remembering this, there are a few names which is really interesting, but they are psychological, but they always have to eye in front the absence of that quality. They are not trusting, they have no faith, they don't sacrifice, they are not fulfilled. They use such word also as if there's just the absence of those qualities which the rishis want to go in, which the soul has.
Yes. We may think that this is a duality of mythical structure, but it is not so. I think I was wondering when I was studying Sri Aurobindo many times that he speaks about anti-divine forces. He didn't overcome that conceptual thing. He didn't come to something more solid in the mind. Why do they speak about anti-divine forces, Mother and Sri Aurobindo, all the time? Because they are real. Whatever we do, they will be there. Whatever our mind may think, there are forces in the darkness which do not want this sacrifice. And they have right to be, because they want to preserve the formation which is already established. So everything which was once manifested has a right to be and has a right to preserve itself on that ground, or on not sacrificing ground. And there is something in us which wants to progress and to manifest the divine and move forward. So both are in us. We can see it clearly. We always think between these two. At least I do. How to preserve what I have and how to go forward. Yes, it's a tricky thing. You have to come out of the balance of what you are to something you are not. Are you ready to do that? And it's quite a challenge. So, Sri Aurobindo translates Vayuna as phenomena and Hotra as the energies of the sacrifice coming back to it. It is by yoking our thoughts and mental concentration to His luminous and vast mind, to the one who knows all the phenomena of our existence and all... What does it mean? He knows all the phenomena of our existence. Also, if we look in this, knowing all phenomena, He orders the energies of the sacrifice. In what sense this phenomena is then? Then He knows first phenomena and then He orders the energies of the sacrifice. It's as if one process, knowing the phenomena, you know what kind of sacrifice to make. No, there is duality, clearly, yes. There is something to be done with, to be worked with, phenomena, and the energies of particular kind are to be applied. Somebody is to know how to do it. You cannot apply the same energy to everything. You have to know the phenomena, you have to know the conditions, the structure into which you will pour that energy.
I think that, that it's probably not, well, my interpretation is that it's not knowing. The ordering is not a knowing in relation to phenomena. Phenomena are the things in that happen in the becoming. Things that happen in the becoming are ordered.
Yes.
And so the ordering...
You mean ordering is happening without knowing?
Well, it happens in the self. So there's an energy of ordering, which is not what we call knowing. And so when you say that it's knowing the phenomena, it implies the way we do philosophy. We know phenomena experientially, and then we abstractly know the meaning of the phenomena. And I don't see that this is referring to that mental process. I believe rather that Agni is the energy of the sacrifice, which enables one creature to be eaten by another creature, so that there is a balance in nature. And so that ordering comes from within the movement of the creature itself, because there is universal consciousness in matter.
I don't see contradiction, by the way.
So I just say that you can imply, if you think about knowing versus phenomena, you can imply that there's some kind of abstract process going on.
Okay, I didn't mean that. I meant that there is a consciousness involved which knows how things are to be evolving, yes? And these energies of the sacrifice are ordered accordingly. It's a Vedic vision. The bull is to stand in front of the horse. The knowledge is to precede the power. Power is not preceding the knowledge. So this is what I mean. I don't mean anything else. So, knowing, seeing things and ordering the energies. That's what is normal to perceive, even for us, for human beings. So,
Sri Aurobindo describes illumined mind as a seeing energy. So it doesn't think before it acts. There's no thought there.
In illumined mind, yes. But when we go to Trirojanas, it's another mind altogether. Illumined mind is the top of the lower mind, inconscient mind.
Yes. That's where these gods are.
Depends. How is it? Depends. I'm not sure. I'm sure that in the Vedas they are at least coming from the overmental level, these great Godheads.
But they come into consciousness.
Yes, yes, level. They enter.
Once we don't know that they're ordering from the overmind. We know that they're ordering from the revelation in the illumined mind.
Yes, if you speak about us, but we are looking into what Rishi sees. And then I think he is one of not of us. And this is quite interesting because Mother specifically speaks of it. And she was asked about this and she says, yes, probably, and this she says, no, for sure, they are involutionary beings. They are not like we are, who are evolving. They don't have evolutionary soul. They have a memory as Vamadeva was born. These are avatars. They have a memory of the highest realm, and they come, they take the soul for the embodiment, but they are not those souls who evolved. So they have this strange knowledge, as if viewed from beyond, as if seeing it from afar. And because of that, it has some value for all of us, because we cannot have this knowledge. We are evolving beings. We step by step looking up, we see the sky. And beyond the sky, we don't see another sky. And they see all the skies down. For us, there is only one sky.
So, since having enough of the beings are there, dying in sleep,
yes. So, where was I? Yes, it is by yoking our thoughts and mental concentration to his luminous and vast mind, to the one who knows all the phenomena of our existence and all the processes of our transformation, Hotra. It's very beautiful. It's from root hu, to invoke, to summon, to call, to offer, which he establishes and reigns in the universe, that the great all-reaching affirmation of the Supreme can be successfully made in us. Vishva rupani pratimunchate kavih prasavid bhadran dvipade chatushpade vinakam akhyat savita varenio anuprayanam ushasam viraja. All forms he takes on to himself, the seer, and he creates from them good for the twofold existence and the fourfold. The Creator, the Supreme Good, manifests heaven wholly, and his light pervades all as he follows the march of the dawn. I didn't read your other translations of Sri Aurobindo, but you will read for yourself. Sri Aurobindo translates Dvipad and Chatushpad as the twofold and the fourfold existence. And somewhere he says even this, in other his translation, all forms are robes of seer, puts on that he may create the good and bliss for the double and quadruple creature. Savitri describes by his light our heavenly world. Supreme is he and desirable. Wide is his light of his shining in the march of the dawn. And in footnote he says, literally, two-footed and four-footed. But pad also means the step, the principle on which the soul founds itself. The esoteric meaning is four-principled, those who dwell in the fourfold principle of the lower world, and two-principled, those who dwell in the double principle of the divine and the human. Now, this is a most puzzling statement, most puzzling. But what I think, after long thinking, that this fourfold, four-principled is the principles of our existence which include lower, inconscient being and superconscient and all in between relations. So to say, our universalities, universalities, or dwelling places, if you like. And twofold refers to the soul as a spark of the divine, and the divine as the carrier, as the universal. So one refers to the soul, other refers to our nature. Fourfold principle is our nature, it seems, natural being, and twofold principle is of the soul and relation of the soul to the Supreme. At least I can see it only like this for now. But if you have some other ideas. Yeah, you can divide it in many ways. Fourfold means manifestation of nature. There are four principles to manifest nature, whereas twofold division is only on the soul and the divine. There is nothing, there is no nature as such. It is soul and its relation with the divine. The psychic has direct relations and comes from the divine. Individual and universal divine. And fourfold is the nature, manifestation of this divine in nature. You think?
Four
varnas. Physical, vital, mental, and beyond nature. As you like. You divide as you find it fit. I can't speculate more than that. He didn't give a clue, so we can't really make it. That means he didn't find it possible to give for us a clue. So all the forms, in other place he says it would take too long to explain this.
It's not the first time.
Yes, yes, he avoids this particular chatushpad and dvipad several times. So I'm not going to give you a clue in that sense. So all the forms he takes on himself, pratimunchate, literally means he releases them within himself, for himself. So to say, he drops on himself all the forms. And by this act, he presses out or creates the good for all. The Creator Savitar, the supreme choice of all, revealed with his wide look the whole sky. Widely he shines, following the forward movement of the dawn. Why I put supreme choice, I don't remember. Varenias. I don't even know. I would not do it again like this.
But you even think that sometimes the choicest thing is the supreme, so he says the supreme for varenia.
Yeah, most desirable, so Shubhendra says, most desired varenia. Most choosable for us, most wanted. The best what we could seek and find. Yasya prayanam anuanya idhyayu deva devasya mahimanam ojasa yav parthivani vimame sa etashah rajansi devah savita mahitvana. In the wake of his march, the other gods also reach by his force to the greatness of the divinity. He has mapped out the realms of earthly light by his mightiness, the brilliant one, the divine creator. It's interesting how they see the creator. They follow him, so to say, his path. In the wake of his march, the other gods also reach by his force to the greatness of the divine. It is the same. Savitri is, Sri Aurobindo uses word Savitri, in English language, or Savitar, I am using not to confuse, but I am confusing more than now, because Savitri is she. We are speaking only about him. It is only he. There is no Savitri here. Yes. Now I'm changing only to Savitri because it's confusing even more. So whose movement forward all the gods have followed? Anu Prayanam. Anye id Yayu Deva. Other gods, Yayu, went forward. And by his power reached to his greatness. Devasya Mahimanam Ojasa. Came to his greatness, yes? That's Yayuh followed and came, so to say, Mahimanam, Ojasa, Devasya Ojasa, Devasya Mahimanam, so for both. He has mapped out the realms of earthly light, Yav Parthivani Vimame, who measured out all the earthly or wide spaces of manifestation of earth, Sa Etashah. He is the mighty steed of the sun. Shubhendu says simply, doesn't say anything.
Brilliant.
A brilliant one, Etashach. Usually Etashach is the steed, the horse, that white horse which symbolizes the sun, or the power of the sun. The divine impeller, Savita, Mahitvana, by his greatness. He is by mighty steed of the sun, the divine impeller, Savita. So, Parthivani Rajansi, all the spaces of the embodiment, earthly spaces, he measures by his greatness, yeah? Mahitvana. Utayasi Savitastrini Rochana, Uta Suryasya Rashmibhih Samuchasi, Uta Ratrim Ubhayatah Pariyase, Uta Mitro Bhavasideva Dharma Bhih. And thou reachest, O Savitri, to the three luminous heavens, and thou art utterly expressed by the rays of the sun, and thou encompassest the night upon either side, and thou becomest, by the law of thy actions, the Lord of love, O God.
The night upon either side.
On both sides. Ubhayatah. From both, from the top and from the bottom. And it's quite interesting how he speaks in what language. Uta is everywhere. And you are going, Savitar, Trini Rochana, so to say. And you are... And Uta again. Uta Suryasya Rashmibhih Samuchyasi. And you are coming to the three Rochanas of the intuitive mind, over mind, and over mental gnosis. You're reaching, and Suryasya, and of the sun, Samuchyasi, you become fit with the rays. By the rays, with the rays of the sun, you become fit, or you become the same as the rays of the sun. That's what Sri Aurobindo says in his highest, in the rays of the sun, he manifests himself. Utaratri mubhayataf pariyase, and from both sides you embrace the night. So the night can be embraced from both sides when we enter into three rochanas, when these three realms of the overmental consciousness and close to the supramental are realized, the night becomes embraced from both sides. That's what Krishna says, whom Sri Aurobindo considers to be the overmental Godhead. He says that this world, this manifestation, is in me. I am not in them, they are in me. And this is the most puzzling thing. How can he say that the whole world, the whole universe is in me and not I in them? And this is exactly where it is, then when you reach to that transcendental world, suddenly you see that the night, the whole manifestation, is embraced from either side, from both sides, Ubhayata. Utamitro bhavasi, and then you become Mitra, Deva, O God, Dharma bhih, with your holdings, with your dharmas, with your establishments. Now, dharma is used not in the sense of Buddhistic dharma or even later post-Vedic dharma. It's a Vedic dharma. It has this meaning of holding manifestation or holding the truth in manifestation, rather. So Mitra is the Godhead of the divine consciousness. So Savitar becomes Mitra when he reaches the highest and embraces night from either side. He introduces that transcendental consciousness into manifestation. O Savitar, you move within or towards the three luminous realms of Svar, intuitive mind, overmind and supermind, totally fit to the rays of the sun, the outpouring of the supramental light, enclosing night from both sides, from above and from below, and by your laws, which are supporting the manifestation throughout, you thus become Mitra, the Supreme Consciousness of the Divine Mother, Aditi, creating all that is in your all-measuring perception. Because Mitra is this all-measuring perception of Aditi. From root Ma to measure, from which we have Matri, Mother, from which we have Maya, the creatrix. Mitra. You can. You become the divine meter. The profound perception here is that the light of Savitar is rising to Svar and enclosing the night, we just dwelt on it, from both sides, manifesting a perception of the simultaneous oneness with the transcendental. There is a passage in the Secret of the Veda where Sri Aurobindo explains the phenomena of the Vedic night. Maybe the phenomenon better. But the cave is only the home of the Panis, says Sri Aurobindo. Their field of action is earth and heaven in the midworld. They are the sons of the inconscience, but themselves are not precisely inconscient in their action. They have forms of apparent knowledge, maya. But these are forms of ignorance, the truth of which is concealed in the darkness by the inconscient, and their surface, the front, is falsehood, not truth. You can see how beautiful it is, yes? The front for us is this darkness, but the depth of that is truth. So to reach to that depth, you have to enter into the transcendental realm of three rojanas. Once that depth is reached, you are in the truth, and you can see that the darkness is only a surface phenomenon which you embrace. It's not opposite. It's not that we are shooting somewhere beyond and leaving darkness behind. There is no up and down in this sense. There is a deeper and more surface perception. For the world, as we see it, has come out of the darkness, concealed in darkness, the deep and the abysmal flood that covered all things, the inconscient ocean, Apraketam Salilam. In that non-existence, the seers have found by desire in the heart and thought in the mind that which builds up the true existence, Savitar, or Agni. Agni is rising from the Savitar. In the other hymn we will see how it is spoken. He is rising from Vivasvat. This non-existence of the truth of things, Asat, is the first aspect of them that emerges from the inconscient ocean. And its great darkness is the Vedic night, Ratrim Jagatoni Veshanim, which we read in the first hymn, which holds the world and all its unrevealed potentialities in her obscure bosom. Night extends her realm over this triple world of ours, and out of her, in heaven, in the mental being, dawn is born, who delivers the sun out of the darkness, where it was lying concealed and eclipsed, and creates the vision of the supreme day in the non-existence, in the night, Asati Ketu. It is therefore in these three realms that the battle between the lords of light and the lords of the ignorance proceeds through its continual vicissitudes. Uteshishe prasavasya tvameka id Uta pushabhavasi deva yamam bhih Ute dam vishvam bhuvanam virajasi Shyavashvaste savitah stomam anashe. This is the last verse. And thou art powerful for every creation, and thou becomest the increaser, O God, by thy movings, and thou illuminest utterly all this world of becomings. Shyavashva has attained to the affirmation of thee, O Savitri. Of all that strives towards the growth, you are the soul master, and you become an increaser, O God, with your many movements. For you reveal by your wide light all the world of becomings. Shyavashva has realized your perception in himself or in him by affirmation of you, O Savitar. So this is the end of the hymn. There is a long and beautiful passage here which I would like to look into, which Rubindra writes. It's his article, small 3 pages. But if you want, we can leave it for the next time.
There's still time?
Still time. We can start even to read now and see what he says. Or if you want, we can go again through him in general to see the whole picture. Both are possible. Or you study at home with him, see what you can get, and then Indra with his shining host, the Maruts, Agni, the divine force, fulfiller of the Aryan sacrifice, are the most important deities of the Vedic system. Agni is the beginning and the end. Just from here I take this statement. One has to later dwell on it. If we will have hymns to Agni, we will see what it means. This will, that is knowledge, is the initiator of the upward effort of the mortal towards immortality. To this divine consciousness that is one with the divine power, we arrive as the foundation of immortal existence. Indra, Lord of Svar, the luminous intelligence into which we have to convert our obscure material mentality in order to become capable of the divine consciousness, is our chief helper. It is by the aid of Indra and the Maruts that the conversion is effected. The Maruts take our animal consciousness made up of the impulses of the nervous mentality, possess these impulses with their illuminations, and drive them up the hill of being towards the world of Svar and the truths of Indra. So beautiful. Now it makes sense more and more. We studied hymns of Maruts, many of them. Maruts represent Rudra in this movement. They are called Rudras. They are sons of Rudra. They are powers which move our evolution upward. And then when they bring him the consciousness to Indra. Indra becomes Marutvan. He possesses them. He illumines them. And with his power and illumination, they conquer the darkness, Maruts. Our lower mentality is already charged with the divinity in it. And it is not known until it rises to the highest realm and it is being introduced by Indra's light. Our mental evolution begins with these animal troops, these Pashus. That's why he is called Pashupati, the Rudra, Shiva. They become, as we progress in the ascension, the brilliant herds of the sun. Gava, rays, the divine cows of the Veda, such is the psychological sense of the Vedic symbol. But who then is Surya, the sun? If these are all these our mental energies and so on and so forth, and Indra is that mentality, who is the sun from whom these rays proceed? He is the master of truth. Surya, the illuminator, Savitri, the creator, Pushan, the increaser. These are three names of the sun used in the Veda. Surya, the illuminator, Savitri, the creator, and Pushan, the increaser. His rays in their own nature are supramental activities of revelation, inspiration, intuition, luminous discernment. And they constitute the action of that transcendental principle, transcendent principle, which the Vedanta calls Vijnana, the perfect knowledge, the Veda written, the truth. But these rays descend also into the human mentality and form at its summit the world of luminous intelligence, Svar, those three Trirojanas, of which Indra is the Lord. For this Vijnana is the divine and not a human faculty. Man's mind is not constituted of the self-luminous truth like the divine mind. It is a sense mentality, manas, which can receive and understand truth, but is not one with it. It can perceive it, it receives it, understands it, but not one with the truth. The light of knowledge has to present itself in this human understanding, tempered so as to suit its forms to the capacities and limitations of the physical consciousness. What a beautiful statement. The light of knowledge has to present itself in this human understanding, tempered so as to suit its forms to the capacities and limitations of the physical consciousness. And it has to lead up progressively to its own true nature, to manifest successive evolutionary stages for our mental development. Therefore, the rays of Surya, as they labor to form our mental existence, create three successive worlds of mentality, one superimposed on the other. The sensational, aesthetic, and emotional mind, the pure intellect, and the divine intelligence. The fullness and perfection of these triple worlds of mind exists only in the pure mental plane of being, where they shine above the three heavens, these three rochanas shining above Tisro Divah, three heavens. And this is illumined mind, higher mind, and proper mind. These are universal mental levels. Tisro Divah. As there are three luminosities, Trini Rochanani, beyond. But their light descends upon the physical consciousness and affects the corresponding formations in its realms, the Vedic Parthivani Rajansi, earthly realms of light. They also are triple. Tisra Prithivi, the three earths. And of all these worlds, Surya Savitri is the creator. Now, this is exactly what we discovered last time or the time before, that I said that physical manifestation is supramental manifestation of our physicality, of the earth. And once that focus was lost on the rays of the sun got lost. The supermind is no more there in the philosophy of post-Vedic literature. You cannot find the supermind. Then the whole understanding of this nature also was lost, because it is linked to the sun. So if sun is not there, then there is no nature there to be developed. It has to be dropped. It's only for the purpose of running away. It's an illusion. The whole manifestation is only but illusion. But they are light, yes. We have, in this figure of various psychological levels, each considered as a world in itself, a key to the conceptions of the Vedic rishis. The human individual is an organized unit of existence which reflects the constitution of the universe. It's also a very powerful statement. The individual is the unit which reflects the constitution of the universe. It is the means for the universal to come into manifestation. It repeats in itself the same arrangement of states and play of forces. Man, subjectively, contains in himself all the worlds in which objectively he is contained. It's profound. Preferring ordinarily a concrete to an abstract language, the rishis speak of the physical consciousness and the physical world, earth, bhu prithivi. They describe the pure mental consciousness as heaven, dhyav, of which svar, the luminous mind, is the summit. To the intermediate, dynamic, vital, or nervous consciousness, they give the name either of antariksha, the intermediate vision, or of bhuvar, multiple dynamic worlds formative of the earth. For in the idea of the rishis, a world is primarily a formation of consciousness and only secondarily a physical formation of things. A world is a loka, from root, ruj, to shine, a way in which conscious being images itself. And it is the causal truth represented in the person of Surya Savitri, that is the creator of all its forms. For it is the causal idea in the infinite being, the idea not abstract but real and dynamic, that originates the law, the energies, the formations of things, and the working out of their potentialities in determined forms by determined processes. Now these determined forms and processes are structures which appeared by manifestation and hold to themselves. Because the causal idea is a real force of existence, it is called satyam, the true in being. Because it is the determining truth of all activity and formation, it is called the rhythm, the true in movement. Because it is broad and infinite in its self-view, in its scope and in its operation, it is called brihat, the large, vast. So satyam ritam brihat. Savitri, by the truth, is the creator. But not in the sense of a fabrication or mechanical forming of things. The root of the word means an impulsion, a losing force, or sending out. The sense also of the ordinary word for creation, srishti, it's like dropping out of yourself. And so a production, the action of the causal idea does not fabricate, but brings out by tapas, by the pressure of consciousness on its own being. Look how beautifully he describes what is tapas. The pressure of consciousness on its own being, on sat. When chit is pressing on sat, it is tapas. That which is concealed in it, latent in potentiality and in truth, already existent in the beyond. So that's why su is to distill or to press out, or to say to, by the force of consciousness, out of the being, to press something, truth, and thus to manifest. All this is the pressing out of that soma involved in this movement of manifestation. The delight, the essential delight of being. Now the forces and processes of the physical world repeat, as in a symbol, the truths of the supraphysical action which produced it. So all this manifestation is nothing but reflection of the same movement of consciousness. They repeat. The physical world, all these forces and processes of the physical world repeat, as in a symbol, the truth of the supraphysical action which produced it. And somewhere Shubindu says, everything is here, is a symbol. We are all only symbolic existence of him, of his real existence. We are symbols of his truth. Here the same, he says the same. As in a symbol, the truth of the supraphysical action which produced it. And since it is by the same forces and the same processes, one in the physical worlds and the supraphysical, that our inner life and its development are governed, the rishis adopted the phenomena of physical nature as just symbols for those functionings of the inner life which it was their difficult task to indicate in the concrete language of the sacred poetry, that must at the same time serve for the external worship of the gods as powers of the visible universe. A little difficult sentence, but what it says is a very powerful statement. That's why, because the same force works in the supraphysical, in the supramental and the physical, the same force. That's Rishi adopted this imagery of the nature as true to the supraphysical nature. What can be better to hide the truth of the supraphysical nature? You speak in terms of nature. You speak about the sun rising in the sky. You speak about the dawn. Is it not wonderful that they found that, and it is not just the dawn, physical dawn, but the symbol of even physical dawn represents that symbol of the supraphysical dawn. So they can be matched, and the supraphysical knowledge can be hidden by physical symbols in pure match. No problem.
And the other thing is also what comes here through what you said before, that we are all, how you say, the expression of the symbols of Shiva's truth also. There comes the aspect of surrender, how important is the state or the right way of aspiration and surrender,
This is the most unique thought, that they adopted this imagery, symbols of nature, to express the same movement of consciousness, which is also supraphysical. The solar energy is the physical form of Surya, Lord of light and truth. It is through the truth that we arrive at immortality, final aim of the Vedic discipline. It is therefore under the images of the sun and its rays of dawn and day and night, and the life of man between the two poles of light and darkness, that the Aryan seers represent the progressive illumination of the human soul. It is so that Shyavashva of the house of Atri hymns Savitri, creator, increaser, revealer. Surya enlightens the mind and the thoughts with the illuminations of the truth. He is Vipra, the illumined, the ecstatic priest. It is he who delivers the individual human mind from the circumscribed consciousness of self and environment, and enlarges the limited movement which is imposed on it by its preoccupation with its own individuality. Such a beautiful sentence. Therefore, he is Brihat, the large. But his illumination is not a vague light, nor does his largeness come by a confused and dissolved view of self and object. It holds in itself a clear discernment of things in their totality, their parts, in their relations. It's like supermind. It possesses all the properties of this vision. Therefore, he is vipaschit, the clear in perception. Man, as soon as they begin to receive something of this solar illumination, strive to yoke their whole mentality and its thought contents to the conscious existence of the divine Surya within them. Now that may answer Rod's insistence on within, because it is within them, it's not somewhere else. That is to say, they apply, as it were, all their obscure mental state and all their erring thoughts to this light manifested in them, so that it may turn the obscurity of the mind into clearness and convert the errors of thought into those truths which they distortedly represent. This yoking, yunjate, becomes their yoga. They yoke the mind and they yoke their thoughts, the enlightened, of, to, or so that they may be part of or belong to the enlightened, the large, the clear perceptioned. Then the Lord of Truth orders all the human energies offered up to him in the terms of the truth. For he becomes in man a soul and sovereign power governing all knowledge and action. Once this becomes, and this is the Gayatri Mantra, as you remember, Tat Savitur Vareniyam Bhargo Devasya Dhimahi Dhiyo Yonav Prachodayat. Tat Savitur Vareniyam, that best light of Savitar, Bhargas Devasya, or that shining, dazzling light of the God, Dhimahi, we establish our consciousness upon Dhiyo Yonav Prachodayat, who will promote our establishments, our fixations. We concentrate our consciousness on his light and he will move our concentrations. This is what exactly Shubindu says here. Yoking. Yoking becomes their yoga. They yoke their mind to his light and he moves them. They become enlightened in his enlightenment. Then the Lord of Truth orders all the human energies offered up to him in the terms of the truth, for he becomes in man a soul and sovereign power governing all knowledge and action. Not interfered with by conflicting agencies, he governs perfectly, for he knows all manifestations, comprehends their causes, contains their law and process, compels their right result. We are so far from this state, but we are on the way to join his illumination and to become his instruments. There are seven of these sacrificial energies, hotras, in the human being, one corresponding to each of the seven constituents of his psychological existence: body, life, mind, supermind, bliss, will, and essential being. Their irregular action or wrong relation, caused and maintained by the obscuration of knowledge in mind, is the source of all stumbling and unhappiness, of all evil act and evil state. Surya, Lord of knowledge, puts each of them to its right place in the sacrifice. Knower of phenomenal soul, he arranges the sacrificial energies. That's what he is arranging. He is arranging all of these movements of transcendental and this world to interact in one greater manifestation. It's beyond even our comprehension. I thought about this manifesting hotras in a different sense, but Sri Aurobindo widens the vision. He includes Satchitananda into the sacrificial movement of Surya Savitri. Man thus arrives at a vast and all-embracing affirmation in himself of this divine creator. I will stop here, and next time we will continue, because the text itself is so non-human that it switches off all mental capacities to hold this light, and as Vedic hymn also. So, but by training ourselves to dwell on these visions, we can widen possibilities in the mind to introduce this light. So we end with a mantra. Om vam me manasi pratishthita mano me vachi pratishthitam avira virmaedhi vedasyama anisthaha shrutam me ma prahasi anena dhitena horatran samdadhami rutam vadishyami satyam vadishyami tanmam avatu tadvaktaram avatu avatu mam avatu vaktaram avatu vaktaram. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. That's why Sri Aurobindo somewhere says, Veda was our beginning, Veda will be our end. Because these universal truths, they will stay to the end. They are not going to disappear or to be altered. They will be...
But she didn't consider themselves as a beginning. They were also at the end of the cycle. The four colors came first.
Yeah, they are mentioning Purva Rishaya, the first rishis. They consider these rishis of the Rig Veda consider themselves to be Nutanas, modern rishis. But they speak about ancient rishis and ancient knowledge. So. Satya Yuga, yes. They came from before Satya Yuga.
Before the... yoga or
before or
they were before. But then came the yoga of knowledge, and then comes when it goes.
But they brought the yoga of knowledge. That's what they did. They established this Satya Yoga. Now we will read the manifestation of that sun energy. It's available in Secret of the Veda. Open and read.
Is it online?
Also online. All these texts I put there. If you want to read it again, it's very good. We printed it out. You don't have a printout? You didn't take. Okay. We made. No, it is after the hymn. So if you want, you can. We can print for you. No, it is other hymn. There are two hymns of Shyavashvatraya. This is the first one. With this knowledge is profound. We are also, I am so fortunate to have to be put into this, to deal with this, to read this.